You can see my award-winning climate comedy show Spoilers at a festival near you, provided you live near or are going to McCunclith or Wells comedy festivals. More dates added soon near you, conceivably, who knows what might happen.
And if you are at Mac, come and see ComCom Redacted live at 4 p.m. on the Saturday.
Go to stuartgoldsmith.com and click the very attractive banner image to find out more. Hello and welcome to the show. Stuart Goldsmith here. This is the Comedian's Comedian podcast, and today I'm thrilled to be bringing you this interview with Julia Masley. Julia is an award-winning clown from Estonia, now based in London, and her latest show, Ha 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 Ha, was nominated. I fudged that then. It's seven, but I had to do it in two threes and a pause. Apologies to Julia and all fans of precision. It was nominated for Edinburgh's top prize of best comedy show and named number one comedy show of the year by The Guardian. And even more importantly than that, I finally got round to it after everyone and their dog told me to see it at Edinburgh. But I couldn't because it was often completely sold out and then the extra shows were at 2 a.m. and I had kids up there. All right. I finally got to see it in Bristol. And as you will hear me state in no uncertain terms at the beginning of this interview, it completely blew my head off. It is so good and so special and so precious. I just loved it. She's now completed a four-week sold-out run of shows at London Soho Theatre, and she's about to embark on a four-week off-Broadway transfer to save the USA at the Soho Playhouse in New York. She attended and also, I believe, has taught at Ecole Philippe Goliot and at various drama schools across the UK. So in the first half of this episode, we're going to discuss vulnerability within an improvised show, very specific sort of vulnerability that. We're going to talk about moving as a child from Tallinn in Estonia to the UK and the importance of physical communication when learning a new language. Join the Insiders Club at patreon.com/comcompod, where you can watch the full episode. Yes, watch the full episode and get access to 30 minutes of extras with Julia, including stuff on protecting yourselves when things go wrong, performing long runs of the same show, and committing to the things that'll bring you joy. Really, really good. I think it's just under 30 or just over 30. Random. Let's call it 30. Really good gear there. So if you're in the Insiders Club, please enjoy that. Here, without further ado, what was that? 2 minutes of ado? That's not bad. Here is Julia Masley. Welcome to the podcast, Julia Masley. Thank you so much. Thank you for your show so much. You're going to have to sit here for a few minutes while I have this big emotional kind of gush about how wonderful your most recent show is. And we're in Soho right now, and you're on every night in Soho at the moment. So you must be going through this kind of it's all working thing.
I finished actually my
You
run
finished?
Now. Yeah.
Okay.
So
okay.
I'm like, whoa.
Oh, this is a sort of afterglow
nice. Yeah,
experience.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Okay. It would be true to my belief about podcasting and reality and authenticity that I leave in that big stupid mistake that I've researched badly. So that's staying in.
Beautiful.
The way that your show works, and for people in the audience, I always think for people listening who aren't familiar with the guest or are less familiar with the guest, I always want to start by sort of explaining why I want to talk to you. I've seen a bunch of your shows. I saw Logs. I didn't see Legs. Everyone told me about Legs, and I wasn't able to get there. I saw Logs. I saw an early version of Choosh. And then I saw, how many Ha is it?
Does seven.
It, seven Ha's. Ha, 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 ha. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I saw that in Bristol. And this incredible thing happened at the Edinburgh Festival in 2023 where your show became the underground breakout. Oh, my God. And this is it's only ever from the perspective of an individual. Everyone told me that I had to come and see your show, but your extras were all at 1:30 and my children were there and I couldn't see it. I finally saw it in Bristol. And I honestly feel like everyone in the audience left a better person. That's how much I loved your show. So you need to sit there now while I just love bomb you like this. I just thought it was absolutely incredible. You've just been doing it in Soho. Let's start there. How was your Soho run?
It was really fun. It was the longest run I've ever done of my show in my life. It was 4 weeks long, longer than Edinburgh. So yeah. It was all like... But it was so fun to do the show because it's not the same every night.
Of course.
It's really fun because the audience is always giving different things to me. So I'm never like I can't really go autopilot mode because it's, you know, someone's personal life, like, is in, they might open up with something.
Yeah.
So I can't really, like, just go. They have to be present. So it's like, it's fun. It's been fun.
And it's the simplest show. It couldn't be simpler. Can you describe to it? How do you describe the show? Or do you not? Do you prefer not to describe
no,
it so
I
it's
can
a surprise?
Try. I solve problems. I'm there to solve everyone's problems, and it's a serious show. So I don't know why you're having me on this podcast. But yeah, I ask audience problem, and they tell me, and I solve. I try my best.
It's just so lovely. But what I loved about it, I think I said to you after the show, it's the most generously spirited show, and you are taking, I suppose, enormous risks. Like if the audience don't give you anything, you have nothing. But at no point were any of us concerned that it could go wrong, because you create, and I want to talk to you about how you see it and how you create this kind of, this incredibly open space whereby, certainly on the night I saw it, many of us became as clown-like as you. Like, we all became sort of very innocent and open. Like, you walk on and you are so open and curious and just sort of breathing out love for us that happens to all of us. Is it always like that?
You know, audience is always in a different place, right? And it always depends. Sometimes Friday night can be more drunk crowds than a quieter Wednesday. So it takes them a bit longer to come together. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like, I think everyone... people have it, you know, people want to solve each other's problems, I think. If they're having a good time, they want to be a part of it. And I think, I don't know, I think, I guess it's about just coming together as a group of people and making a community with an audience, right?
Yes.
And I think everyone, in the end, wants to be together. And I think that's the, in a way, that's the show, because I'm just there to hold space for that to happen.
Yes.
And I think people are like, they want to be together and play together.
It reminded me of, you know, when, like, the advice that I think I've seen this on Reddit or somewhere, I'm sure it's like a popular idea, that the thing that a parent would say to their child if their child sees something like a tragedy or an accident or something on TV, the parent would say, look for the helpers, you know, look for the helpers, because it reminds you to feel, As a child, as a scared or a vulnerable person, if you see other people, you see, like, there's a car accident and that's a scary thing, but people rush in to try and help. And I felt like it was, there's a parallel there with your show.
Yeah.
You let us all be helpers.
Yeah, and I think people, because they know that I'm in a situation where I'm kind of trying to come up with it in the moment, that people want to help me as well, and that's really nice for me, because often I don't know what to do or what the solution is. So someone else will be like, oh, I'll help you, because I've experienced this, so I can share that.
Yes.
And that's really, that's when it gets really lovely, because then people are just like, oh, I moved to say something. And then it's like, oh, thank you for being here, because I don't know what to do right now. I need you.
But you know? You have a way of saying to us, like, there was a lovely moment in our show where you just sort of said something happened and someone got involved in a surprising way, and like a third party became involved in the problem, and you said, I've lost control of the situation. And the weird thing was, you had and you hadn't, because if, you know, if I am doing a stand-up gig and I say I've lost control of this situation, you know, it's different, because you have the control of having no control, you know, like the free fall of, you genuinely don't know what will happen next. There are surprises in the show, and I felt like, my assumption is, there are a few surprises that can join the dots, or that can make sense. There are sort of options to make sense, and you probably don't activate all of those things,
yeah,
but they're there so that they can make sense.
And so I have a little bit of a safety
to
fall back on in case I...
Is that how it feels? Because it felt like you had lots of party poppers, that if everyone, if the situation happened to get near this party popper, you could reach in and go, and it would just create an end or something like that.
Yeah. They
didn't seem to me like things you needed to rely on for safety. Is that how they feel to you?
It's just nice having those things, yeah. You know, when you are just responding. It's nice to know you have some things. But it's true, I don't use them unless there is something, you know.
And that is so magical, because I think the show that we saw, someone said something about salad. And then one of the surprises happened to be salad. I won't give anything away. I hope that you do the show thousands more times. But it was so perfect. And I suppose it can only be that magical if you have numerous options, such that if two things happen at the right time, you can go, this third thing is perfect. And actually, you have lots of options. Maybe it's a bit like a mentalist or a magician, you know, like a sort of a dumb teaching example of mentalism might be that you have 10 different playing cards hidden around your body. And so when anyone says a playing card, you can go, bang, it was here. And they never know there's more than that one,
yeah.
I suppose.
Yeah.
Talk to me about I want to talk to you about the development of the show. But before we get into that, what does it feel like to be you in the show?
It's fun. It's curious to see what different people say. Like, it's always really interesting. And I'm always surprised by what people say. Like, or sometimes it's something so personal that I can't believe someone shared there in a room of people, you know? So it is mainly just really interesting. And I'm often moved by, like, what people share or what someone else does in the audience in response to someone else who shared something really intimate. And it is like weirdly affirming. Like, I'm like, oh, people are really, can be really wonderful. Like, so this, I'm just playing a game, but then it kind of, it means that people can do really lovely things as a result. Like, it's totally surprising, because I'm not really, I'm just giving them the, you know, I just say problem, and then it's whatever they say. I don't have no idea. So it's really interesting, if anything.
Do you feel nervous before the show?
Yeah, every time.
And what's the root of those nerves? What do you think might go wrong?
Because I don't know. I just don't know what will happen and what they'll say. I have no idea if I'll be able to respond. Like, it's just scary. It's unknown. It's complete, like, unknown. Every day is different.
And how does that feel different compared to, say, before you did Legs or Logs, which both those shows you did with the Duncan brothers. So I suppose that's different because you have a team that's different. But in terms of your, like, say, your solo show, is it a different type of nervousness beforehand?
Yeah, because in there it's like, it's still nervous, but you know that you have, like, even on a bad day, even if you're not present, you still have a show that you can get through. But here it's like, you don't. Your response or your connection with them is like, it is the show. So you can't be autopilot, or it will just... you can't. Like, you have to be present, because they might just open up about their family member dying. And if you're autopilot and you're not there, you're not gonna be connected with them in a moment where they shared something so personal, you know?
Have you ever not been connected in this show?
I mean, I had a few moments where it's like, I just didn't hear what someone said. And I think maybe that's because I went a bit, maybe. So I had to be like, I have to ask again what they said. And then I have to be like, oh, wake up. Like,
yeah,
you need to be here. Like, you can't. It's really, because they're opening up about, I mean, if someone says something like, they could close down after that and feel awful. Like, it's in my, you know, it is important that I'm here, you know, responding. It's, yeah, yeah.
And do you feel vulnerable during the show, or do you feel powerful because you are the connection, the catalyst for the connection in the audience?
I think I feel vulnerable for sure, yeah, because I'm just trying to come, yeah, I don't feel powerful, I think. I feel constantly on a tightrope, like,
yes,
because I have to find the links and, like, make sure that all, and make sure that everyone's okay, because they're all, like, part of the show and some of them are on stage, and I just have to, there's a lot of work I have to balance, like, I have to be present, but then make sure that this person is fine. And so and there's no time to be like, I feel really powerful, you know what I mean?
But does it feel, do you feel pleasure? Are you, like, pursuing,
yeah, it's
like,
fun.
One of the few things I know about clown is to, yeah, go towards your pleasure. So where is, it's not power and there's a tightrope, but what are the sources of pleasure in the show?
Yeah, I like pretending that I don't know. The pleasure maybe for me is also just like something, trying to do something beautiful, I think, is, mm-hmm, my pleasure. Like, mm-hmm, the big spectacle and bring people together. And as a I enjoy playing. So hard to talk about it.
I know. I'm really it's totally fine. Of course it's hard to talk about, because we're trying to sort of sum, yeah, up, yeah, the kind of ineffable magic of the thing. I really appreciate you engaging with it.
Great.
You've done very well so far in answering my questions as if there are answers to these questions.
Yeah, as if there are answers.
You started, yeah, to say, I like pretending.
Pretending.
What are you pretending?
That I am the pretending of the time this coming to, I don't know if it's pretending is the right word, but yeah, pretending to be this, like, ethereal being from another planet. It helps me, because Julia as a person, I think, wouldn't be as innocent, and,
yes,
you know, Julia as a person would have thoughts, and but
yes,
being,
you would bring your, Julia would bring her own experience to,
yeah,
it,
yeah, yeah,
and her own opinions,
yeah. But this when I'm doing the with a clown coming on, like, I have this pure kind of need to solve the problems, so it's, like, yeah, very simple, so that's enjoyable, just to, yeah, to be this, like, to have no brain. Like, I don't know about the world, so I will do my best. So it's kind of like, and if someone says something really like, oh, I have this disease, I'm not gonna, like, Julia would be like, oh, maybe it's better I don't ask you much about this, but this, so innocent, you know, I ask and I don't know, you know?
Yes,
so,
yes.
And it's okay. Like, and it's like, kind of like a child would not have like, they just ask directly and it's okay.
And is the clown, how do you relate to the clown in this show? Does she have a name? Does she have a history? Is she your clown that you're applying to this show, or does she exist only for this show?
I think it is just, I guess, me on, as a, I guess they call it stage persona, do they?
Uh-huh.
I don't know. I guess that's just what I do on stage. I think that is still me, but it's the stage me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have a name for it, or...
Okay, it's not a character in the sense of, like...
I don't... I hope not, in a way.
I love that you don't know. That's much more kind of open.
I have no idea.
Because the way in which that persona is a vessel, as you say, an innocent vessel that is kind of... There are some parallels, presumably, with kind of meditation. Do you know what I mean? You sort,
yeah,
of empty your personality and,
yeah,
just become curiosity,
yeah,
and love,
yeah,
and hope.
That's it.
And just sort of positivity. And to say that to empty your personality.
I like that emptying.
Yes,
that's
there's
a nice way of putting
it. It's not that you're there then devoid of personality. It's just that all the facts are gone.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's like you're a person, but with no facts.
I like emptying because before a show, I try, in a way, like in the wings, I am trying to empty.
Tell me about that.
No, but what you said, emptying, just here. Just nothing, no personality. Yeah, just what you said.
Yeah,
I think
okay.
I related to that.
Okay.
The emptying bit somehow. Yeah.
Okay. And the decisions that the Julia in this show, the persona in this show, is, you said, it's almost like an alien, and there are kind of visual elements with lights and colour and what you're wearing that are, like, talk to me about how those came about, because they seem so completely, what's the word? I don't want to say they're arbitrary or random, but they seem, they're so unusual, they're preposterous.
Yeah.
They're preposterous, and yet they feel completely right. And I'm interested in what decisions were made about those. Like, did you try a different costume?
Yeah.
And what felt wrong and what about that, and what felt right about this one?
Yeah, I had so many phases of costume for this. But then in Edinburgh, I had, like, more like a blazer, and it was like kind of light, very light. But then it got so sweaty in the basement. Like, I was dripping, like completely covered in sweat after every show. So I was like, there's no, like, it was moldy now, you know? There's no way I could have used that one for this show. And so I changed it, and it's blue now, blue. And I think it's blue because it is, because I think it's the color of sadness, and, you know, okay, blue. It's, and I think the problems are sad, and I think there is, yeah, it's the sadness, and the problems are, like, it is a serious show.
tell me how you arrived at it. What was the was it, like, you played the game of, you were improvising with an audience and discovered the game of solving a problem? Tell me how long it took to make. We should go, in fact, before you answer that, let's go back further in the life of Julia, because all I know about you is that are you from Tallinn?
Yeah.
I'm so glad, because I didn't want to be patronizing. Tallinn is one of the only places I've heard of in Estonia, but I've been there many times. I love Tallinn. I love it. It's beautiful. You're from Tallinn, and you went to an English boarding school in England.
I moved here when I was 12, yeah.
Okay, yeah. Why did you move? What was going on behind that?
Strange time in Estonia, just, you know, Estonia just stopped being Soviet Union, you know, very different, and my family moved. I mean, my mom was born in Estonia, my dad in Ukraine, and they all kind of ended up in Estonia, and then so we were born there, but we were there because of the Soviet Union migration, and then we speak Russian in family, but then born in Estonia. So at the time, they were just like, because they could send us somewhere, they did, because they weren't sure what to do with us, like, in the country, because the country changed and different government, like, they were
This, I feel like I remember this was as a result of, there was a huge protest, which was a line of people. Was that in Estonia? That there was an enormous line of people that all lined up, and it was this enormous protest movement that kicked off. Maybe I'm wrong.
I mean, there were, it was such a strange time because, you know, like, suddenly Estonia was back to being Estonia. Like, and then there were like half the people from the Soviet Union just kind of like, okay, cool. Like, and then they weren't sure that, now my little sister went to Estonian school and very much integrated in the country, and very, this is very normal now. But at the time they just didn't know. Like, they were like...
So they sent
they
you
just thought,
here and they stayed there?
Yeah, they stayed there. They just thought, like, should they just go and learn English? Because they would have to study in Estonian, and that's not their mother tongue either. So they might as well, like, study in a language that's a bit more, like,
Global,
sure. Yeah. So it was like their way of thinking. But now, like, my little sister, you know, goes to an Estonian school, loves it. And I went to Estonian kindergarten, had a great time. But I think it's just like a way of thinking that being British is great.
And sure, American, that's all we've got. That's all, you know, we've got, like, is the brand.
Yeah. Eastern European thinking of, like, let's go. But sure. Then it's like, no, it's just as messy here.
And, yes.
Yeah. Tell me about being 12 years old in a boarding school in a foreign country. I imagine that was easy.
So easy. No, I mean, I thought I spoke English, but when I got there, I didn't understand what anyone was saying to me, like, for maybe a year. And then I picked it up. But yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, of just being like, smiling and just being like yes to everything, like,
oh my god,
yeah it was strange. But then there's all these people, like, very international school, so we had all these people from, like, you know, my best friends are, like, from Nigeria and, like, Kenya and, like,
okay,
you know, so it's like I wouldn't have met, like, friends from these places. So there's, like, positives. I think that was the positive thing, that they were in a similar situation and we were, like, growing up together, you know. Mm-hmm. But it's a very strange place. Like, I don't support this type of thing. But I think, and I was, like, trying to be understood physically because you can't really speak.
Okay.
And I had this really strong accent. I mean, it was tough. It was, like, being in another culture and, like, changing yourself to fit in.
And there's a sort of an ostensible link there between clowning and smiling and miming at people.
Yeah.
But presumably there were lots of people who've that's happened to,
yeah,
that didn't then become clowns. So yeah. I don't want to be too glib about the link between those things. But I do you feel, does it echo for you?
Definitely, because the physical way of communicating became a thing for me, for sure. And, like, for a while, even when I did pick up the language, it still wasn't, like, it's not my language. So, and I want to connect. So it's like, yeah, I think there was definitely a... You start communicating on a more... Even, like, with just friends who are from completely other cultures, you just... There's a more direct way of communicating that's not just language. It's, like, more emotion or, like, physical or, like, the food we eat together or share or something. Like, we all grew up living. We just became each other's family in a way for that period of time. But, yeah, you communicate different by just being crazy or, like, yeah. So there is a link for sure, yeah.
And how did you feel at the time about your family?
I mean, it was funny because I told my mom this, but, like, I remember calling her and just, like, I would, like, be crying. But then, like, when I called her, I was like, everything's great. Like, I'm doing really well.
Oh.
Like,
oh my
because
God.
I wanted her to think it was a good idea and, like, it's going to be fine. Because I think I wanted to be here. Like, it was exciting, too. But then I was like, yeah, this is, like, the right thing. Like, you know, you made the right choice. She obviously as well, like, had no idea what... You know, had no idea what she is, a young parent who just thought, like, didn't know, like, mm-hmm. But I think, I mean, I'm really grateful because I am really grateful. I think that's just my little journey of doing what I ended up doing. It's like so weird, but I'm grateful for it in the end. Yeah, but it was, yeah, it's funny.
I think most. Comedians.
I didn't even realize it was a weird thing.
Oh, really? That your situation was unusual?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's really strange. It's really strange. There's something, not that, but there's something similar in my life, which I only just really recently realized was, oh, that's very weird. Yeah, you know, but you're just used to
it.
It's that me and my wife didn't live together before we got engaged and we got pregnant shortly afterwards.
Wow.
So we hadn't lived together. We'd had a 5-year relationship with me in London and her in Bristol.
Whoa.
Not, you know, like a couple of hours away from each other, not different countries, but a 5-year relationship. We knew we wanted to be together. I proposed to her. She said yes. We started planning a wedding. Then we got pregnant. Then when we were pregnant, we moved in with each other.
Wow.
That's insane. Like, I mean, it's not, I mean, it's lovely. Everything's great. I'm very happy. But But my point is that I only very recently realised how unusual. I do seem to... I remember making a show shortly after moving to Bristol, which was sort of, in a lot of ways, it was about me wrestling with the compromises of living with someone. It's incredible the extent to which we don't notice how unusual our circumstances are.
Yeah.
Because we're the pilot. We're living the life.
We're the hero of the story,
the hero
right?
of the story. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So tell me how you discovered performance and being funny.
Yeah. Ooh, like, I mean, the funny thing, I think it was there, like, growing up, like, my dad always liked, like, when like putting on tights on your head and going to the street.
Yeah.
I think he was always like, do it, do it. And my mom was like, don't embarrass us. And
okay.
But my dad was always like, do it, do it. And he loved, like, we would always watch like Jim Carrey, like being really weird. And he'd be like, you can do that. He was always like, even though like being comedian wasn't ever like, I don't think even my dad thought that that was, like, it was just not something. I think growing up in, like, an Eastern European, like, no, you go, you study to be a lawyer or, like, something really, like,
yeah,
that you do for the rest of your life. But I think I always loved theatre, so got into theatre and then really obsessed with theatre and Complicité, there's a company.
Yeah.
Really just found them and just obsessed, like thought that's...
Is this, it was still at school?
It was still at school.
And did you have a poster on your wall of Théâtre de Complicité and you would have some deep feelings of a teenage girl?
Yeah, teenage, like,
I did this as well. I had lots of teenage girl feelings about theatre and art and my posters.
Yeah. I was obsessed with, like, reading Stanislavski and, like, all, you know, all the... just anything to do with theatre I wanted to know about.
Okay.
Going to the theatre and, like, not understanding the play, but just loving the experience of being in the theatre. I was just obsessed.
Ah, why? What did you love about it?
Everyone there together and, like, staying in, like, curtains and, like, the before bit where everyone is quiet, like... waiting,
the
anticipation.
Yes.
But then it's boring and we're all like, oh God, when is it going to end? But I think I love the before moment when everyone is like, something's about to happen.
Yes.
But then most of the time it was like excruciatingly boring. And I remember trying to like force myself to like it. Like I was like, I love this, I love this. You know? And then going out like, this is the best. But it was more like the being together and like, I don't know why, I just loved it. Like,
yes.
But the actual plays were a bit boring.
We were talking about this a little bit before we started recording, but yes, I think I loved the idea of theatre more than I loved theatre.
I love that you think, yeah.
Yeah.
So this is Julia. Coming up in the second half, we're going to talk about attending Goliath with the likes of Viggo Venn and... It's Vigo, isn't it? It's Vigo. That's the whole point. It's spelt Vigo, but I'm sure when I saw his show, he told me to pronounce it. He told us all to pronounce it Vigo. So I've been correcting people and saying it's Vigo. So I hope it is. But anyway, him, Mr. Venn, Johnny Woolley, I think I already said Johnny, and other people besides. We'll talk about the Goliath experience, as Julia understands it. We'll talk about her concern that she was too unrelatable for stand-up, which I think is fascinating and... understandable, not for her purpose. I worry that I'm too unrelatable for stand-up, so I'm always pleased to hear other people freak out about that. And we shall be finding out whether Julia Masley is happy. You can see Julia Masley, ha 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 ha, in New York from the 15th of May to the 8th of June. You can see her in Brighton on the 25th of October, and she returns to the Soho Theatre in London from the 3rd of December this year through to the 11th of January next year. And that's how you know they've got confidence in you. Find out more at Julia Masley. That's Julia and then Masli.com, and you can follow her on Twitter and Instagram at Julia Masley. Now, a little plug for Mac. I'm afraid to say, I'm so sorry, but Redacted is completely sold out. Sadly, Mr. Pete Dobbing, who is going to come along and do the audio stings and nonsense for us, is no longer available due to previous outdoor extracurricular and extra, what's the word, funicular? He is. He won't be in a funicular at the time, so they are extra funicular activities. So he won't be there, so I need to find an alternative to him, and that's really a note to self rather than good podcast blurb-worthy material. But nonetheless, it's sold out, and that's going to be a hoot. We have Chloe Petz, we have Amy Gledhill, and we have Nathaniel Metcalf all appearing on that show. So I think that's going to be a load of fun. Spoilers is on the Saturday of Max, Saturday the 4th of May. If you are there, come along and get a ticket. We've sold a good... we've sold a substantial amount of them, but it's a big venue, so we can always fit more in. What I'm saying, do you know what I mean? It's so easy, isn't it, to pussyfoot around. Like, this isn't one of those, oh, Christ, please come and see it. By no means. I think it's half full and the room's massive, so I'm happy with that. I want more people to see it, and there's not going to be many chances to see it. I don't think it's going on tour. So if you're around, come along at 8 o'clock, and there will... I've just got a text from Tommy Volomiers. Because I texted him earlier to tell him that the Boutros, who I'm not allowed to call that anymore, but nonetheless, that guy, my son, my only son, is learning Finnish on Duolingo, pretty much to annoy me and his mum. But he is doing it, and he's committed to it. He's in the Ruby League, which I don't even understand. But there we are. So a lovely little text for me. Again, not solid blurb material, but of passing interest. To me, let alone anyone else. A reminder for you, please, that the Insiders Club has moved... Oh, I was talking about spoilers. The link is in the show notes, so jump on that. A reminder for you all that the Insiders Club has now moved to Patreon. Almost everyone has shifted over. We're going to send a straggler's email to remaining Orsound, Moonclerk and PayPal insiders and shunt everyone over there. But blow me tight. It is so good to have everything in one place. It's had an enormous effect on my mental well-being as I have been... peddling for many years inside a sort of rusted, jerry-rigged contraption of my own making. And now it's far sleeker. But the good news for you is you get full video episodes if you're in the Patreon. Extra content now in video as well as audio, including, of course, 30 minutes with Julia Masley. You don't get to spend... you do, but it's audio and it's pre-recorded. My point is extra content. You know what it means. Do you know what I've been doing recently is... every time I record episodes with people, I tell them the three things I tell everyone. And those three things are now 12 years out of date. One of them explains what a podcast is, practically. So I've got to update those. But anyway, my point being that you all understand what extra content is, and this is that. You also get exclusive guest announcements. I think Mac pretty much sold out to the Patreon before anyone else knew about it. And new membership offerings, including a monthly Q&A. And the first two of those have been very warmly received, and we can tell because we get to look at the data. This one, the one that's coming up at the end of April, is going to be live on the evening of April the 30th. A live Zoom, rather. I mean, you know, but like, it's going to be a thing. And I don't think we're going to record it or put it out. So we're going to experiment with that. I think the insiders that voted were pretty much split 50-50 as to whether to record it so everyone could hear it or do it live so it was more spesh. And we're going to try a spesh one. So there we are. All right, that'll do you for now. Back to Julia Masley.
The best thing about... They said, go to Golia, he's still alive. And if you want technique, you should go to Lecoq, but he's dead. So it's a bit like, you know. But Philippe is alive. And if you want to learn what you, as a unique person, can give, you can find that there. And then there's no auditions. And I was like, no auditions? Okay, let's go. one will reject
so
me.
So how long did you go to Golia for?
I went... initially for a year, but I thought I'll go for a year and then figure it out. But then I stayed for 2 years because I got really sucked into it.
Okay, and yeah. Just tell me a bit about that experience. Were you in the same year as anyone we now know from the comedy world?
Yeah, I was in the same year as Johnny Woolley, Viggo Venn, Maddie Bye from Siblings, Sami Abuarde. Anyone else who we know? James from James Gold.
Okay, I don't think I know that.
You will know. They're great. The trio, Bagbeard.
Oh yes. Okay. Yes. Of course, I do know James. Yes. Crybabies.
Crybabies. Yes. Of course. Yes.
Excellent. This is so funny to me to go Johnny Woolley, Crybabies, you, yeah. Vigo. And like, it's as I get older in comedy, I'm like, oh, the new generation of like, I mean, it's so exciting. It's so lovely to see. Like, it makes me feel old and happy. It makes me feel old, and it makes me feel so happy to go, oh, I remember doing clown workshops when I was 20, and I don't think I ever really got over that feeling of like, I'm shit at this and I can't do it. I wanted to do it so badly, but I'm too inhibited. I couldn't get over the inhibition. And then I discovered stand-up and went, oh, I can do this. And that took me in a particular direction. But
I could never do that stand-up.
Talk to me about that. Let's just have a side note.
I don't understand what you guys do.
What do you mean? Because when I remember when I was street performing and then I became a comic, and all the street performers said, wow, you're really brave. And all the comics said, you're a street performer? Wow, you're really brave. And I was like, but why? It's the same thing. You know? Yeah, it's the same thing.
It's so different.
Like for a clown, someone who's kind of like, I will offer something and see what happens and pursue it and make things funny. How can that be less frightening than... How can stand-up comedy be more frightening than that, from your perspective?
Because in stand-up, you have to talk about yourself.
You don't have to.
Mainly, though.
Yeah, mainly.
Mainly. I mean, most stand-up I've seen, they use their own life experience.
Yes, or you can talk about cheese graters or...
Yeah, but you talk as yourself.
As yourself, yes. And that's scarier to you than being an empty vessel to create love and harmony.
Exactly. So scary, yeah.
Okay, why is that? What is it about you that needs to be protected from an audience?
I think I find myself boring and my experience unrelatable to anybody. That's how I feel.
That has not stopped any stand-up comedian out there. I mean, I think surely stand-up comedians... There are some of us who think, like, I'm so exciting and interesting, the world needs to hear from
but
me.
But that's great.
Is it?
a lot of the time.
Okay.
A lot of the time. Okay. I mean, it's words as well. Like, I'm not as good with the words. I'm, like, it takes me, I'm always, like, when I'm going to comedy shows, it's so embarrassing because I always laugh, like, slightly behind.
Oh, yes.
Because it takes me a bit longer to... understand the joke, so my laugh comes slightly after, and it's just so
I will
bad.
Make a mental note that anyone I hear laughing slightly after the joke is doing their best. And, do you know what I mean? And like the reason
I'm there,
doing
like the, trying to figure out the joke.
It's harder for them, and they should deserve that a better laugh. That's a more valuable laugh. It's
just
a more meaningful
comes
laugh.
Slightly after.
The worst is, and I do this, is comics, stand up comics watching shows. When I'm watching comedy, I often laugh before the punchline because I can guess where it's going and I'm appreciating it. It's already that moment where you trip over with the two ideas connecting and you laugh. I get there, and I'm sure loads of comics do, get there before an audience.
I love that.
Well, I sort of love it, but I do have a loud laugh and I'm so embarrassed because I think everyone must be thinking that I'm trying to show off that I understood, but it's just a natural laugh.
But
it just happens. So if you and me watch a show at the same time, there'll be a joke, and just before the joke, I'll go, ha! Then the audience go, ha! And then you go, ha!
But that's great. So much laughter for whoever is doing the show. It's like...
That's great. Yes, every time you record a Netflix special, you should have comedians and normal punters and clowns for whom English is not their first language.
Yeah.
And that's how to create a rolling laugh. Let's stay with this idea of why you consider stand-up not for you. You feel that you are boring and unrelatable.
I'd love to do it. It's so scary.
Have you
so
ever tried?
Scary.
Have you ever tried?
I tried.
Spoken.
I tried just, but like open mic for fun. But yes, I couldn't. I just had to get the water, spill it on someone. I couldn't. I freak out. Like I can't just calm. I can't. I don't know how to do it.
That's so funny. I remember doing Phil Berger's clown class with some other comics. Stand-up comics were in there because we were all excited. And a lot of us had the precisely opposite experience. We couldn't not talk and describe the thing. And he was like, shut up, this is shit. This is shit that you know what you're doing. Stop it. Be, you know, take some water. Make an offer. You know, the exact opposite experience. And I think that's probably about protecting the self.
Mm.
So the self that you're protecting when you clown, as opposed to, you
I
know,
should
you're,
try it again
you're,
pre- one day.
You're protecting yourself. Like, I'm not, it's not a criticism.
No.
I mean, you don't have to try it. We need more clowns. We don't need more stand-ups. But But you're like, I'm protecting a thing. I'm protecting myself by not clowning because I feel inhibited. Mm. I always think to be able to... I did Angela De Castro workshop as well. Have you ever worked
with...
Oh, cool.
I haven't done
She's amazing. Oh, absolutely amazing. Yeah, again, years ago, a million years ago. Cool. She had this whole thing about, like, what's the difference between an actor and a clown? And it's a sort of a permanent, unanswerable question.
She's a lovely person. I've never done the workshop, but I've heard they're great.
Yes, she's really fantastic. And she has that wandering the earth clown kung fu kind of like, who are you? Where do you live? Do you have a home or do you just walk? You know, and so she was talking about the difference between acting and clowning. And for me, I think the way I would describe it to people, probably wrongly, is that to be able to be a clown, you have to be able to fart in a lift and then admit that it was you. You have to go, that was me, everyone. Yeah, that was me. Yeah. I can't do that. Like, I probably can, but I'm inhibited. I go, I don't want to accept the failure that is me. And clowning, it seems to me, is just, I should do an online module clown course where I just tell people that secret for $500. But I never managed to get out of that trap of inhibition. I feel like I will be a failed clown forever because I never could get over the feeling of inhibited and feeling embarrassed. Do you mean I'm caged by that?
Yeah, but... Yeah.
Tell me about being free from that.
No, but I am like that fully. Like, it took so long. I'm just like... I was the worst... Like, I also went to Goliath when I was youngest. I was the youngest there. Me and Johnny were the youngest there. I think I was younger than him. And, oh my God, like, so self, you know, concerned with how I come across as well. Like, as a... young, like early in your 20s, you're so like, what's everyone thinking about me? And like, everyone thinks something about me. Like, how am I, what am I wearing? How am I like coming across right now? Like so much, right? And then so much about clown is like being okay to be bad and accepting that you are bad and not taking yourself seriously and like doing things bigger than life and them flopping and you going, oh, accepting that flop and then everybody laughing. Yeah, like, no, I was the worst one, like, for the whole, like, clown. I mean, like, oof, silent all the time.
And how did that affect the dream of, I'm at Goliath, I'm devising complicité, I want to do this?
Yeah.
Was that dream, was your... determination or your love for that affected by failing and failing and failing and failing?
Yeah, well, I just kept on getting up, and there was a tragedy module, and I was quite good at that, like being Antigone. That was like the good moment, and then the clowning, all the comedy stuff, like in the school, was just silence, silence, silence. And, like, I was just, like, I'm paying for the school, so I get up again and again, and it's just excruciating silence. And then in the end of this week, there's, like, where you have to, like, there's autocall. We do autocall, which we present something that Philippe told us to present on Friday to everyone. Mm-hmm. And you usually work with partners, and if you're bad this week... you have to look for a partner to work with. Everyone will turn away from you.
God. Like,
but if you're doing well, people want to work
picked
with you.
Last for the clown squad.
I was always like looking for a partner. It was so difficult. But then being bad for so long, and then like I was bad for so long, and I would like sit down and just like cry, like for like as soon as I'd sit, I'd just like burst into tears. But then the next day I'd just like get up again. But I remember someone saying to me, like, if only you cried on stage, we'd like love it. Like, why do you cry when you sit down? Like, just stay there and cry. And I'm like, I can't too much. Like, I'm holding on to my dignity. There's no way I'm going to show any weakness. Like, no, but the weakness is...
That's the whole
thing. The humanity
thing.
And the yeah, the thing we want to see and that we'll love you if you just showed that. But I couldn't. And then at one point I was just like, no, like clown is just not going to be for me. Like, I'm going to be good at the tragedy part, but clown is not for me. Like, that part I'll fail at, and that's just okay.
It's when you have succeeded at a thing, it's so easy to look back at the moments when I was crying on the floor and I couldn't do it. And the listener, someone watching the story, the movie of your life, would think, yes, but you knew you could keep going because you're you now. But at the time, you didn't know whether you were just going to be a big failure your whole life. Like, those things are so punishing. The crying with dignity.
Yeah.
I just want to sort of emphasize that, because having recognized a bit of that journey in my own creative journey, the bit when you're thinking, Jesus Christ, I've just died again, again, and it makes me want to cry. I had this with street shows. I had this with clowning. I would be literally in tears. And I didn't know at the time, it'll all work out.
Yeah.
You're just like, maybe it doesn't. Maybe I do this and then I go and work in a call center because I have no skills anymore because all my friends were skilling up and I was dying on my arse.
Yeah.
Sorry, I just wanted to inject that for the listener, that sense of the reality of how painful it is when you said it's excruciating. Mm. It is.
It is, and your whole life depends on it. Like, I cared. It wasn't like I care. I want it so bad. Like, I wanted it so bad. But then it just wasn't. It wasn't. Like, but funnily enough, it was the day I gave up. I was like, I'm not going to do this. I'm not going to be a clown. I don't need this. And it's like, I never even wanted to do clown. Like, I was just like, I just wanted to be good at, like, yeah, anyway, I just gave up. And then I was like, oh, whatever. Like, I don't need this module. And then I still came to school. I still came to school the next day, and I still, like, there was an exercise, and I still got up and did the exercise because I was like, okay, paying for the school, I should do the exercise. And then I got up and didn't care at all how it goes. And then, like, that was, I got a massive laugh, like, that moment. We had to be a plumber, and I did not care. And I was just like, we had to be a plumber. I just, like, ran on stage, looked at the pipe, and I was like, oh God. And then, like, eruption of laughter. And I was in shock. Like, I was like, what? You know, like, I couldn't believe that what I did, that made everyone. And then because I was so shocked, people were laughing at my shocked face.
Oh, that's lovely. That's lovely.
Yeah, and then because they were laughing again, I just, like, started to cry of joy. Like, I couldn't believe I finally, like, just crying.
Oh, my God.
And then they were laughing because I was crying. And then I was just so confused. Like, what? Like, so confused. And then they started laughing because I'm confused.
Oh, my God.
I was just like, what? Yeah, it was mad. It was so surreal. It's just like, and then, like, silence again. And I was like, oh, my God, silence again. Like, ooh. And then I just, like, I was like, I'm going to do exactly what I did. I'll do exactly what I did. Okay. And then I, like, did exactly the same. Like, looked at the pipe. Oh, God. And then, oh, they laughed again. Yes. I was like, what? And then, like, I remember after that, I was like, I'll do exactly. And now the third time would be too much, right? Because this, and I was like, okay, I'll do. If I said, oh, God, now I'll say, oh, Jesus.
Yeah.
But then nobody laughed. No one laughed at that one. I was like, complete flop. It was a complete flop. And then I was like, so curious, like, why didn't they laugh? And then they laughed because I didn't understand anything. I remember Philippe being like that. And I was like, what? And then I went home like, what just happened? But it was amazing because, like, I felt so exposed. But that was like weeks. Like, it was like the last day of the workshop.
And presumably there were people there who were better at it or more connected to it, who throughout the workshops were getting lots of laughs.
Absolutely.
And you go, oh, well, I guess these people just understand.
Definitely.
It.
And they've done workshops before. Like, that was my first clown workshop. But yeah, people were great. Like, there were great people there. And yeah, it was like, but then I got really addicted, and I'm really stubborn personality, so I was like, if, you know, if clown, like, I'm stubborn, so I just like, if clown is hard, that's the thing I'm gonna go do. Like,
yeah, okay.
Like, I just, I'm like, ugh.
So how would you articulate now? I realize it's a bit impossible. What was, why did they laugh that time?
Well, initially it was just like not caring, but still doing it. It's nothing to lose thing. I think that's...
But why is that funny? Why was that funny to them?
Well, when you don't have anything to lose, you don't think, and then you just do the impulse, and then...
And it seemed honest. Like, they, was that it? That when you, because I laugh at you just doing that little mime of going, oh God. Like, I've seen you do that voice. Like, that's your clown voice on stage, isn't it? Like sort of like doing an impression of the thing, like rather than acting it, just going, now I'm supposed to go, oh God. There's something like that, but it's, even though it's a pretense, it's more honest than pretending to do it properly.
No,
I don't know what it is. My brain wants to understand, but you never know.
It's just not. It's, yeah, it's nothing to lose, and just the spirit of it. And I don't. It's weird.
So do you apply that now? That moment, was that a moment, like, it's a big first moment for you?
Yeah.
Do you use that impulse or that feeling, that flavor of feeling? Is that the thing that you use on stage a lot? Is that, are you kind of in the footsteps of that moment when you're being funny on stage?
I think, like, it's the nothing to lose thing. I think that, I think because I was so bad at school, I didn't have much to lose when I started doing open mics in London, because there were people in my class who were brilliant, and I think they had a lot to, like, there's an expectation, okay, you have to create something brilliant because you've been brilliant and we're all expecting you to do something brilliant. Mm-hmm. But then with me, I felt like I didn't have that. Like, I was just free from that. So I was just like, I think that freedom helped. Like, I had nothing to lose. Like, I just, like, go, no one cares what I'm doing anyway. So, like, why not go and get up and do it? And then, like, no one cares. Like, it's the nothing to lose thing. Like, I think that stage, that going from there was good for me, I think. But also that thing of, like, the confusion, it's the, they laughed at all the vulnerable parts, like, mainly is, like, my face being shocked, and then the honest parts of, like, feeling an emotion and actually, like, being there, like, and yeah, and they were sort of realizing that it's not your idea, I guess, of what you've planned, but it's like the thing that is the honest thing about what you're going through, like, in that moment. Like, I think in the show that I'm doing as well, like, a lot of the time it's like the not knowing, like, how to, or like still trying, yeah, it's like the laughter comes from the honesty of, like,
yes.
It's strange.
Yes, well, that moment I referred to earlier on when you said, I've lost control of the situation.
Yeah.
And you were being honest.
Yeah.
And we laughed because you were being honest. But because you were being honest, and therefore we laughed, because of that, you had not lost control of the situation. Like, you managed to win by losing.
Yeah, yeah, which is what clown, I guess, does, is losing, a lot of losing. And that's what we do. But then that's what, yeah.
Does it make you... I have this feeling like clown people are sort of immortal. Like, or sort of invulnerable in life. Maybe it's true of stand-up comedians. Something I think about often is when Catherine Bohart, of the Trusty Hogs podcast and lots of other things, she said, you can be going through the worst moment in your life and a tiny part of your brain could be thinking, could this be funny? And I feel like there's some clown in there as well. There's some, like, if you can laugh at something awful happening, then you're invulnerable.
Mm.
You're vulnerable, but you're invulnerable.
Yeah.
Like, you can't be hurt by things going wrong. It's like, if you miss the bus and you're being rained on and it's funny, then it doesn't hurt.
So true. I had this when I like my coffee just spilled everywhere. And I just got this coffee, was so excited to drink it. And like, there was a moment I was like, oh, I was so going to be so angry. For a second, I was about to be so angry. But then I realized like, oh, I'm just alone here. But this is really funny. Like, there's moments like that, that you were like, yeah, the tragedy could have made me angry. But then this is so ridiculous. Like,
there's something so beautiful about you feeling free to pursue your own instincts and your own impulses, and the fact that you did that and created this magical thing. I suppose I'm interested in what you want to do next. I might assume that some big agent has seen you and gone, wow, this is special and amazing. Mm-hmm. Let's get you and send you off to castings for beer commercials and try and make loads of money out of it. Maybe that's happened. Or maybe someone has said, this is great. Can you write a sitcom based on ha 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 ha, you know, or something like that? Has that happened? Have offers come in like that? Or are you in a position where people love the show and cherish it, and then you go, great, I'll do it for as long as I can, and then I will be a clown walking the earth and see what happens next?
I think a bit of, I mean, yeah, there's more interest and more opportunities now because of the show, and that's a positive thing, I think. And I still feel, though, like that it's, I mean, I guess an agent doesn't come and, like, take you and then everything is okay. What we, like, have in our imagination is, sure, like, and now, here you go. It's more like, no, you still, you make the work.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Or you decide what you, where you want to go, and then maybe they can help. But like, at least not in my experience. I don't know, maybe for someone else it has been like that. But what to do? Yeah, I have some ideas of what I still want to try with this show live. Still some like things that I'm like, oh, it would be cool to try.
Can you tell me about any of those, or are they top secret?
I don't know, because I don't know if I'm doing it yet,
yeah,
right?
Okay.
It's like, it's just kind of early days of like, I'm still like not done with the live show, I guess,
yeah,
is what I mean. Yeah, and I guess I don't want to say it yet because I'm unsure if it will happen or like, but I feel like there's a more that I would like to try with the live show, like with this show. And yeah, I'm doing it in Melbourne and in New York. I run
amazing
in New York 4 weeks in May.
My God.
Yeah, that will be fun.
Wow.
And terrifying.
Like, what theatre? Do you know the theatre? Have you seen it? Have you been there?
I've been there. It's Soho Playhouse.
Okay. Yeah, great.
Like, yeah, it's
oh my God.
Be fun. Yeah. So I'm doing that and, yeah, excited. And doing some festivals. I always wanted to do more like more theatre festivals as well, mm-hmm, like to try where they can like, where I can do some like, use the lights and stuff, mm-hmm, you know, like I love the comedy spaces, but then I also love being able to create more of like an image. And so having both is great. And I'm excited to do the show like with more, I guess, yeah, more things like that that are possible in spaces like that. And yeah, I don't know, seeing what happens and doing different things. Yeah.
Are you happy?
If I'm happy, I think I am, actually. I'm very happy and very lucky position, I think, of doing the thing that I love for a living. So yeah, I am.
And if you had one quality that got you to this place,
yeah,
besides being funny, what would that be?
Low expectations. You know? Yeah.
I thought you were going to say, I hope.
Sorry.
I didn't have any hopes. That's the wrong. What I meant was, what I can imagine you saying was when you were talking about persisting, when you kept getting up.
But it's also giving up, though, that helped.
But giving up helped. Yeah, right. What quality got me here? Giving up.
Yeah. Giving up, I think, is a big one. Yeah. Surrendering.
Is there any way to frame that in a in a more usable... I mean, it's, to be honest, that's a very funny idea that you would just have, like, live, laugh, love. You might just have give up.
Surrender, give up. Yeah, to die and... Yeah, I think is a... I think that helps.
Yeah. Thanks, Julia.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
That was Julia, and a reminder that you can see her show, Ha 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 Ha. How many was that? Ha 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 Ha. It was right. You can see that in New York in May and June, 15th of May to the 8th of June, Brighton on the 25th of October. Do not miss it, by the way. I think I gushed about it sufficiently in the episode, but honestly, it is a special and precious thing. And thank you all of you that came up to me during the Edinburgh Festival last year and said, Goldsmith, this is your sort of thing. Bloody hell. Mwah. Gorgeous. It was brilliant. And also, if you have missed it and you're in or near London or can get to it, London at the Soho Theatre from the 3rd of December at the end of this year through to the 11th of January 2025. More info at juliamasley.com, and you can follow at Julia Masley on Twitter and Instagram. I'm supposed to remind you that the Insiders Club has moved to Patreon, but you all know that. I'm not going to say it all again. Patreon.com/comcompod. And if you are listening, I don't know if I made this clear. If you are listening on Allsound, Moonclerk and Moonclerk? I don't know. And PayPal, there's only four of them left. Oh, Moonclerk at least. Your unique feed will stop being updated on the 30th of April, right? So check your emails for more details on how to switch over to Patreon, because at the end of this month, we switch off the old feed and it all goes Patreon only. Join me on Saturday, the 4th of May at Mac for the award-winning climate show, Spoilers, 8 p.m. I look forward to seeing you at Redacted if you were lucky enough to get one of those tickets to that sold-out thing. And thank you, pre-blurb, thank you, what's it called? Post-amble. Pre-post-amble, thank you to our insider producers who remain Keith Simmons, Glenn Tickle, Sam Allen, Jay Lucas, Gary McClellan, Dave McCarroll, Miles Walsh, Nick Waite, Andras Purdy, I never remember Andras, I'm so sorry, I think I change it up every time. Caroline Schmidt, Jonathan Stewart, Richard Lucas, Paul Swaddle, Alex Wormall, James Burry, Ashley Stewart and Mike Sheldon. And a big thank you as ever to our special insider executive producer, Neil Orange Peel Peters. All right, I think I've done that one. I'll do it again, it's my show. Right, that's that. Thank you to Julia. Thank you very much to Andrew White for the use of the studio. Thank you to producer Callum. The music was by Rob Smouten and Susie Lewis did the logging. And now there will be a post-amble, but if you're not sticking around for it, ta-ta. Right then, can you tell that this is superior audio quality? I hope you can, because I've been perving over the SM7B microphone for the last... I don't know, what, 3 or 4 months? And I finally took the plunge and bought it. And I tell you what, it's too heavy for my boom arm. So it's on my boom arm, but it's balancing on top of an old MP3 player that we bought for the boy probably 6 years ago so that he could play music in his cot. But it's like a little sort of 3-inch high mini thing. And nonetheless, it's really good. So even though I mean, I've got to buy another new boom arm now, just please let me know this is as good as I think it is. I think it's good, but I'm... no judge. So chat wise hey, listen, this is a sad and beautiful thing, but Julia and her producers were very kind and let me invite a friend of mine and her father, who was very, very ill and has now since passed away. And I just want to say an extra special thank you to Julia for allowing Joe and Nige into the show, even though it was completely sold out. Thank you for making space for them. They loved it. And it's one of those, God, I've got to, I mean, is this just a symptom of being in your mid-40s? I feel like there's been so many episodes recently where I can think of 4 or 5 distinct episodes where I've had to talk about a death. But anyway, this is I don't want to besmirch or kind of fudge this one, which is as special as any of the others, but this is a dear friend of mine and her very lovely dad. But my point is, he was a wonderful man, she's a wonderful person, and I'm so indebted to Julia and her producers for being so kind and generous and letting them get in, even though it was totally sold out, fitting them into the studio somehow, because they loved it and it was special. And if there is a thing that you can give to someone who you... I mean, I hope that none of you are in the position of knowing that you're on the way out, but we will all... I mean, not all of us, but some of us, certainly a lot of us, will have to face that. Not just our demise, but the idea of our imminent demise. And actually, I can't think of much of a nicer thing to do than go and see this specific show by Julia with... You know what I mean? If you know that the end is nigh... to go with your child, or from the child's perspective, to go with your father, knowing that this might be the last thing you see. What a way to go. I mean, I've seen hundreds and hundreds of shows in my life, and I can't, I mean, is this too bleak? Is this too depressing to go, do you know what? Julia Masley's show, and this is a recommendation, is the sort of, I wouldn't mind it being my final show. That's a thing, isn't it? I mean, I mean that. I genuinely mean that. That is how, it's another thing again. It's its own genre of thing, and you should go and see it. But I send lots of love to Joe, and I'm so sad to hear about the passing of Nige. He will be much missed, and I'm so grateful to Julia for making that happen. So I've said all I need to say on that. Here's a thing I'll tell you quickly, because I shared this with my business network, but I'd love to share it with you too. This is an example, like a really... Oh God, right, okay, I've got to go and pick up the kids from school in 4 minutes. I'll tell you this quickly, it's worth it. I received a shitty piece of mail, which, I mean, not fan mail, certainly not hate mail, but somewhere in between the two. And they go into a special folder in my Gmail called Twats, which is a subset. It's a subfolder of a folder I've got called Made a Difference. Have I mentioned that to you before? Whenever I get lovely emails that tell me how much the show, this pod, has made a difference to people's lives, I put them in the Made a Difference email, thinking one day, before I die, I'll have a look through them. That'd be nice. And there's a subfolder in it called Twats. But I'm pleased to say there's only like 6 emails in there. And I think I've tweeted, you might have seen me, the Apple podcast page for this podcast has got like 1.4 positive reviews, of which maybe 20 are disparaging one way or another. It's not for everyone, it's fine. But so often the 1-star reviews happen because I've had a trans guest on, and they go, this guy's a dick and he's weedy and reedy and his voice is annoying and the thing isn't funny, as if it's supposed to be funny, and especially the woke ideology bullshit, you know. it's so funny to me that that the kind of transphobes always tell on themselves with, like, I hated this show, also the pro-trans stuff in it, so that makes me laugh. But anyway, there are a few people who end up in the Twats folder, and someone got in touch I literally can't even remember what they said. It was some... Do you know what it was? It was about... it was an email saying that I interrupt too much on the show. And that, to me... Like, have you ever heard a comedy podcast? I think I'm the least interrupting guest ever. Maybe I'm not. Maybe I've changed. Certainly that used to be my model. I say out loud to enough people, oh, that's the USP of the show, is I try and ask perceptive questions and I shut up and listen. Maybe I don't always shut up and listen. Maybe I've changed and, I don't know, grown in confidence or arrogance. maybe I've grown in hubris over the life of the pod. But my point is, it was like, what do you want from me? Do you mean the show is the show? I don't need that feedback. And I always think it's funny, and it's funny when people get in touch to go, the free thing you gave me wasn't to my liking. Like, who cares? But I had that in my head, and I was ill at the time. I was ill at the beginning of Easter, and it was sort of, you know, not that being ill was much fun, but it was made worse by like one particular night where that negative feedback was going around my head. Anyway, I'm a sensitive little sausage, and it kind of was going around my head because I was in a sick bed feeling sick. So the following day, I was feeling a little bit better, and one of the kids, I shan't say which one, was in a right tiz, like a right getting angry with me. And I tried everything I could do to sort of laugh them out of it and tweak them out of it and distract them or what have you. And nothing was working. And I thought, hang on, 2 birds with 1 stone here. I said, do you know I got sent a nasty email? And they went, what? And I went, yes. And I explained a bit more of the context of the podcast, such as they understand it. And I said, look, I got this nasty email, and this person said, yeah, you didn't let the thing, but the thing's free. Why would they bother getting in touch? And my child started laughing, and we both laughed at it. And my child wanted to reply with it. We kind of co-hatched this idea that they should reply. We will not do this. They should reply with an audio message of them going, oh, diddums, did you not like the potty waddy? Which I thought was funny and glorious. And anyway, the point being... And if the listener got back into this and knows who you are and you're referring to you, I bear you no ill will at all. But my point being that I genuinely, it was like Kung Fu Panda. It was like the end of Kung Fu Panda 3. I'm not going to spoil it. Yes, 3, not 4, which is unnecessary, but fun. It was like the end of 2. It was like the end of 2. It was like the inner peace bit, right? I took an attack and I caught the attack, the negative thing, and I rolled it around my body. And I turned it into a positive thing, which was making my child laugh when they were upset. And that felt really good. And I highly recommend you do that. So if you get shitty emails or, you know, negative feedback or what have you, try telling your child about it when they're in a bad mood. And the fact of it being an unusual thing to tell them might help distract them. And they might suddenly, I was genuinely glad that this person sent me a shitty email. What a lovely thing that was. All right. So between now and when we next speak, do try to retain a consistent sense of self, or at the very least, a sense of self. I'm off. I recorded an absolute blinder with Jeffrey Asmus. So good. So detailed is some of the stuff that there were two distinct moments where I was like, mate, I'm paywalling this. So if you're in the Insiders Club, you can look forward to some real insider gritty, this is how it's done stuff. All right. Cheerio for now. Goodbye.